all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 7:06. Nice to have you here on this Wednesday morning, July 24th. Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Will join us in just a minute or two. Then later this hour, we will review the flawed arguments used to justify voucher schools. We'll do that with Derek Gottlieb, an associate professor at the University of Northern Colorado, who's coming to Wisconsin next week to make his case as part of the Wisconsin Public Education Network Summer Summit. We'll visit with Todd Alba as well, coming up later in the hour. President Joe Biden will deliver an Oval Office address this evening at 7. Civic Media's news and talk stations will bring you the address live as the president talks about his decision to not seek re-election and what he plans to do during his remaining time in office. Again, 7 o'clock, a special report for the president's address across much of the Civic Media radio network. Brewers beat the Cubs last night in a rain-delayed game at Wrigley Field, 1-0. They are going to be playing again this afternoon. The first pitch at 1:20, pregame is at 12:45 on stations across the Civic Media radio network. And then as we head over to EAA and what's happening with the fly-in and with Brittany out there, we tell you that Rob from Tigerton says, good morning. It's cloudy and 57. Looking forward to sunny weather and getting on my lawn tractor and getting some lawns mowed. He says, in the summer of 36, my grandma Layman was pregnant with my dad that summer, and that song from the Manhattans that we played earlier, Kiss and Say Goodbye, I remember that song from the Carol Burnett Show when I was a kid. So we get weather and memories from Rob from Tigerton today. I believe, Brittany, have I properly unmuted you? There were like jets taking off behind you a few minutes ago there. So how are things, yeah, how are things at the fly-in or the air venture?
Oh, you know, it's actually a little crisp, a little chilly. I've been here now 4 years in a row, and I have never felt this cool air during this week. So everyone's enjoying that. You can see it is definitely cloudy. It's foggy in places as well near Rice Lake and Cumberland. You are seeing some dense fog that will burn off by about 9 o'clock this morning. Otherwise, wildfire smoke, haze in the air today. Starting off with mostly cloudy skies, we will clear through the afternoon with more and more sunshine. The entire state expected to be mostly sunny, but also much cooler as well. Highs still staying into the low 70s into the northern parts of the state and mid 70s for everyone else. So a really comfortable, crisp, and refreshing day. No rain in the forecast, and in fact, no rain in the forecast as we close out this week as well. So it is a great time here. If you can make it tonight, this is our first air show and the PM. This means they're going to be shooting fireworks off of airplanes, a huge fireworks show, and even some mock bombs that go off. I'll just put it that way.
What?
Yes.
What? I don't. None of this. This doesn't sound safe at all, Brittany.
I don't know how they do it.
And you sound a little apprehensive. You're like, they're fake bombs and fireworks from planes.
All right.
How do I word this to not scare people?
Just say that it's being done by trained professionals. It doesn't sound like it is, but just say they're trained professionals, and we'll see how that goes. We're hoping for a very simple and non-terrifying report from you tomorrow morning as well, Brittany. Thank you so much.
All right.
Let's bring Congressman Mark Pocan into the conversation now as we again remind you that President Biden will be delivering an address from the Oval Office. Oh, one other note, of course, Up North News has our daily newsletter. You can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll tell you why summer school has become so popular thanks to Republicans in the legislature doing next to nothing about rising child care costs. And it's Harley Davidson homecoming week. So learn a few extra facts about Harley Davidson in our newsletter as well. Congressman Mark Pocan joins us now. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Pat. I'm doing as well as I think I can, given the bit of a crazy day we're going to have in Washington.
It's been a week. And it's been, frankly, a 3-4 week stretch, unlike any other. But because Vice President Kamala Harris was in Wisconsin yesterday, her first big rally, standing room only, overflow crowd in West Allis, I have to ask you about that first, and then we'll work our way backwards. But the reception for Kamala Harris, the signups, the volunteers, the donations, the party unity, I'm not going to lie, Congressman. It's a positive development, but I wouldn't have guaranteed you that it was going to happen. How are you feeling about it?
I've been very pleasantly, I'm not going to say surprised, but I'm very happy about how this is all unfolding. I think when you have an authoritarian tyrant like Donald Trump, it's pretty easy to unify, right? Because the fate of the country literally is at risk, especially with Trump's Project 2025 agenda. When people start to look at it, they see this big brother influence that they want to have over all of our lives. This is a scary time. And, with what happened on that debate, I can't tell you how many contacts I had with people who are just off the charts nervous. You saw it yesterday in Milwaukee, the energy, 3,000 people at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with less than 24 hours notice. I mean, I was waiting for my plane trying to decide if I was going to stay or not. And they weren't sure if it was going to be 1 o'clock, 6 o'clock. They had no location at 24 hours out. And I'm like, I got to go. There's nothing else I can do. So I think this really says something about, where Democrats are. We're excited. And for a change, Donald Trump's not the head of the news cycle. And that's a rarity sometimes in America.
It was very clear long before the debate that when people were looking at President Biden and former President Trump, there was this yearning for generational change. And that, did we really have to go through the cycle again? And in theory, either party could have decided to go in a new direction. We know Donald Trump wasn't ever going to allow that to happen. President Biden did. So for one side, the Democratic side, to embrace generational change, it feels like they have already been rewarded handsomely for making that choice.
That debate was awful, right? There's no other word I think you can use to describe it on both candidates, right? I think people were not excited about what they saw as a black and white rerun of a presidential race. And now you have a modern spinoff candidate from the success of what Joe Biden got done with a progressive forward looking vision. And you still have one candidate that no one wanted in Donald Trump. I mean, honestly, the Republican Party probably is having some internal conversations about what they do at this time. And, they already were putting out, don't worry about the Kamala bump. They just came off a convention off the president, being shot at. They should have the bump, not Kamala Harris. And instead, we're seeing exactly what I think many of us thought. People really do have more faith in this country. They just wanted a leader that they could have that faith in. And now they've got an alternative that I think many didn't feel like they had just a few weeks ago.
Not only did they not get a bump, for the first time, one of their nominees, in this case, their vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance, is underwater from a favorability standpoint. His unfavorable numbers are higher than his favorable coming out of the convention. And there's already talk about buyer's remorse with making that kind of change. And yet, again, because of the timing, because of when the president made his announcement, the Republicans are basically locked into this ticket now. So this is what they got.
Yeah, my pillow guy, if he really wants to make a few extra bucks, I would take that recording of the speech at the convention by J.D. Vance and sell that with pillows to help put people to sleep, because it was that much of a snoozer. I watched it, and not only was it incredibly boring and the audience finally nerd to keep themselves awake, started chanting things that were unrelated to what he had to say, but do you remember seeing him try to do a fist bump? This is clearly a man who's not done a fist in the air in his entire lifetime. Look, if that's who Donald Trump wants, Donald Trump feels better that he looks better, he maybe accomplished that. But at the end of the day, I am quite excited about where Democrats are at in contrast to the Republicans.
Well, and that's what it makes it odd to launch any kind of attacks on Vice President Harris, given all of her experience and an entire career of experience versus, none for elected office with Donald Trump prior to running and, paper thin for J.D. Vance. We're talking to Congressman Mark Pocan here on Up North News Radio. So let's get to last week and your decision to sign, along with other members, a joint statement that asked the president to consider withdrawing from the race. Take me through the process of deciding not just how you felt or what you would say, but to actually put your name on a letter, which was something that obviously was, you know, so far out of what any of us expected when this calendar year began. What was that process like to make that decision?
Yeah, you know, I have enormous respect for President Biden, and I had no intention, as members were starting to do this, until I really had a couple things happen. One, I mean, just the number of contacts we had in the office, people who were so nervous that Donald Trump could be president, it was unbelievable, the percent of people that were reaching out saying something had to be done. I had a chance to see the president right after that debate when he was in Madison. I did have a chance to have a private conversation, which I'm going to keep private, with him at that time. But, you know, when I saw the DNC that week going to move up the vote, and it looked like a bit of a desperation move in order to try to secure the nomination, I got really nervous because I know what I was hearing in the district. I know what I experienced when I had a chance to talk to him face to face, both, you know, the change from March when I saw him in Madison to now. You know, he's been an incredibly successful president, accomplishing more probably in that first 2 years than I saw in many administrations of others. But unfortunately, he got involved and became president much later in life. And, you know, this was something that we had to do. And I think now you're seeing it turn out the way I think we had hoped it would. And, you know, again, it was hard, Pat. I mean, you know, I respect him. He's been great on labor issues. You know, those are of high priority to me. He's been so good on so many issues. But at the same time, we were on a collision course with losing, and that meant losing the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the White House. And then that Project 2025 would no longer be a project. It would be reality 2025. And that was just too much of a risk.
It really brought it to almost a family level. We talked about this with Angela Lang yesterday, the difficult conversations that families have to have with somebody that they respect so greatly. You know, as we say, something has come off their fastball, and making that decision can then sometimes bring a family together. That appears to be what we're seeing here. And we're going to talk more about that with Congressman Mark Pocan on the other side of this break. And then our homeroom segment coming up at 7:30, Todd Alba coming up at 7:50. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, on this beautiful Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlow. More of our conversation with Mark Pocan in just about 90 seconds. Continuing our conversation now with Congressman Mark Pocan on this Wednesday morning on Up North News Radio, and as Democrats take a look at what could quite easily be called a brand new day. It had been my sad duty, Congressman, to let my followers on social media know that Congressman Derek Van Orden was again doing Derek Van Orden things, which included submitting a letter to Vice President Kamala Harris urging the use of the 25th Amendment to essentially take over and remove President Biden from office. Congressman, how many of those Republican colleagues there do you feel have somehow forgotten how much of President Trump's cabinet was considering actually invoking the 25th Amendment around January 6th of 2021?
So, you know, Derek Van Orden, America's least self-aware member of Congress, you know, It really is like living through an SNL skit every time I watch him do something publicly, because it should be comedy, but it's not. Unfortunately, he's serious about it. Many Republicans, you know, they've forgotten about what happened on January 6th. You know, it was a normal tourist day. Remember, they said afterwards, they forget about the reality of the Trump administration. They forget it's Donald Trump who just killed us doing anything at the border that they claim that, you know, they want to get done. You know, this is a cult, right? There's no other way to describe the behavior. And, you know, Derek Van Orden is the guy who, you know, hands out Kool-Aid. So we're doing our best to have people in Wisconsin understand that. You know, Pat, I just spent Friday, I was in La Crosse, Viroqua, Richland Center, and Platteville with Katrina Shanklin, one of the candidates running in the August primary. And next day, I did doors in Platteville. People are getting it. You know, people really do understand this, and I felt really gratified to see that at doors. I love doing doors. I know you as a former elected official, know the value of that. The good news is I think people understand that the Republicans are not serious. They don't seem to accept reality. And I think that's going to work well for us going into November.
Let me take just a quick tangent to talk about that August 13th primary, because as mentioned, you've endorsed State Representative Katrina Shanklin. She's one of three candidates running in the Democratic primary. The winner in August will take on Derek Van Orden. Rebecca Cook and Eric Wilson are the other candidates there. But there are also these two state constitutional amendments. And as Mark knows, as being a former legislator, well, both of us are former legislators. Mm-hmm. So occasionally I hit up this U.S. congressman with questions about the legislature because he served on it so well, including on the Joint Finance Committee. So you actually still have the expertise to talk ever so briefly about those constitutional amendments. Yeah. And what it is that Republicans are trying to sneak past the voters if those amendments were to pass.
So this is a power play, right? They're trying to say somehow Governor Evers shouldn't have the authority to, distribute funds and do his job as governor. And, quite honestly, when the 2008 economic crash happened, that's when I was on the Joint Committee on Finance. And had we not had the governor be able to move those funds, I don't trust the legislature. I mean, an active legislature is a lot, right? They're not always in session. They don't always agree, even among their own party. And you can't expect the legislature to do this well, especially when you need in an economic situation like we had in 2008. You need the funds getting out right away. And they want to take that away. It's a power grab, essentially, from the powers of the governor to give to the legislature, a legislature that all too often doesn't act. And I think that's the problem. It's more about poking Governor Evers than actually helping the people of Wisconsin. And that's why it's a no and a no on the ballot in August 13th. It's important we get out there. I mean, it doesn't matter even where you come from on the political spectrum. If you want the efficiency we need at perhaps times of crises, you need to have that person, that point person, the governor, be able to do those things.
All right, let's come back then to what you're doing in Congress right now and watching from a national political standpoint where this campaign is going from here. And you mentioned part of the case that the vice president is going to make against Trump and part of the case Republicans are going to try to make against Kamala Harris. And one of them is the border. And as you mentioned, again, I find it odd that they're going to try to use the border and immigration. I mean, look, I find it odd anytime this happens in Wisconsin. We're a little bit of a ways from the Mexican border. Eric Hovde's making it a part of his campaign. Again,
well,
I'm not
closer to the border because don't forget he's from California.
So that's true. He is a lot closer to the border that way.
Personal to him, yeah.
But again, there seems to be this amnesia about who is it that killed the bipartisan border deal. So maybe you know something I don't in terms of where Vice President Harris has some kind of a weak point on this.
No, two things. One, Donald Trump is the one who killed that bipartisan deal coming through the Senate that would have had extra protections of the borders, would have turned people around in 3 months instead of 4 years, which is pretty close to what the average is when people come across for asylum. They get to stay here. Nothing they say they actually acted on in good faith. So that's one thing. Second, they have a resolution right now to condemn the vice president for being a bad border czar. First of all, she never was a border czar. They've completely made up a title and a job description she never had. Her job was to make sure that people helping in conditions in other countries so that people wouldn't come. And quite honestly, she did well on that. She got private investment in some of those countries. We had actually fewer people coming out of the three key countries that she was assigned to. And she did her job that needed to happen. But it was Donald Trump who didn't do his job when he said, don't pass the bill. So I think the more that information gets out, people are going to realize who's telling the truth and who's not. And, if they want the old tired guy who lies all the time, they can have that. But this is just one more of those lies by Donald Trump.
All right, let's move from policy to parlor games for a moment. And yeah, it's all speculation, unless you want to break some news and tell us that you're about to be the running mate. But if that's not the case, then let's go ahead and take a look. And again, I know your position. I know you have to say nice things about everybody, but why don't you take me through a couple of names that either people that you like, people that you think would be especially helpful, or hit us up with a dark horse, if you will, as the Harris team considers running mates.
Yeah, I just want someone who connects in the upper Midwest. I mean, I do think Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania still are going to be key. Maybe the map opened up a little different with Vice President Harris as the nominee. But, you know, Governor Walz, I think, in Minnesota has a lot of respect, especially by members of Congress who served with him, a veteran, very effective governor. I think people like Mark Kelly out of Arizona, an astronaut with a very interesting background and story, would be a good pick and helps open up maybe Arizona. Governor Cooper out of North Carolina perhaps does that with North Carolina, where he's very well respected. I mean, some other names include Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania, Governor Beshear out of Kentucky. I know I'm going to start forgetting people because it's early, Pat, but, you know, I just want someone who can connect with people in the upper Midwest, you know, people who sit at the kitchen table and worry about paying a mortgage and having health insurance for their family and having a vacation. As long as someone comes here and talks about stuff like that, we're going to be in good shape.
And then finally, we've got less than a minute left here, but Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu is speaking to Congress today. You and many other Democrats have decided to skip that. Would you like to talk about that very briefly?
Yeah, I mean, bluntly, I believe he's a war criminal. And had the international courts actually got permission to get an arrest warrant, I would have been glad to have served it, because I think he belongs behind bars for the number of people he's killed and what he's created, the instability in the Middle East. Hamas is awful, terrorist organization who quite honestly treats the Palestinians awful, but so is Netanyahu. I see those two as quite similar, unfortunately. The people of Israel and people of Palestine deserve better than either of those two. And, you know, we wouldn't have Hamas come to address Congress. I don't know why we're having Netanyahu.
Congressman Mark Pocan, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Safe travels. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. When we come back, we'll have our homeroom segment talking about the flawed case for voucher schools. Next, you're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio. It's Wednesday, July 24th, and it's time for our homeroom segment. And as our friend Chris Hambuck-Boyle reminds us on Facebook in the comment section, you can go to wisconsinnetwork.org to learn more about the Wisconsin Public Education Network. It's wisconsinnetwork.org. If you go to wisconsinnetwork.org/summit, you're going to learn all about their summer summit. Heather Dubois-Bornan is with us, and Professor Derek Gottlieb will join us in just a moment. Heather, how are you?
Great. How are you this morning, Pat?
Good. Is this the 10th annual, or was last year the 10th annual summit?
This is the 10th annual, if you can believe it. 10 years in a row, people have been gathering every summer to share their thoughts and concerns about all the things going on in our public schools. And it has been an amazing journey for us.
So many speakers and sessions. You'll be doing this at La Follette High School in Madison next week. Last week, we spoke to author Jennifer Berkshire, co-author of The Education Wars, A Citizen's Guide and Defense Manual. And as I was looking through all of the speakers, all of the breakout sessions, one that stood out to me and something that we've discussed a lot here is a session called Lies, Damn Lies, and School Vouchers. And that includes our upcoming guest here, Derek Gottlieb, associate professor from the School of Teacher Education, the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Northern Colorado. Professor Gottlieb, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you here. So, Heather, you want to start with that particular session, along with Christopher Saldana, who is an associate professor at UW-Madison, and what you're hoping people will get out of that particular session next week?
One of the questions people ask us the most when they start to think about all of the ways that Wisconsin school funding formula and the way we do school funding in this state is so inequitable and unfair and inadequate is, what's going on with privatization? What are school vouchers? How do they work? Like, how do they take money away from public schools like I've heard they do? And so we have invited some experts to unpack that for folks and give them some critical context on what vouchers really do to public schools and what are some of the risks of making a choice to use that source of school funding for your own students.
And that's where we get Professor Gottlieb and bring him into the mix. And Derek, why don't you tell us a bit about your own background and what what about it you'll be taking to Madison next week to make this case at the Summer Summit?
Well, thank you, Pat. My background, I am a former high school English teacher. I am a professor at the University of Northern Colorado, though I live in Wauwatosa and have done so since 2020. I have long been concerned about privatization as a solution to questions about school quality, particularly focused on accountability and so on. And I think it's very important for people to see and hear about the ways in which certain promises that voucher proponents make, largely to low-income families and to the public as a whole, are misleading, let's say.
Let's say, because we talk about this on different levels. One of the mm-hmm. levels is that if a parent wants to send their child to a private school, religious school, an academy, whatever the case, that is their decision. But it, mm-hmm. it becomes more of a public discussion when we're talking about a couple of things. One is taxpayer dollars. But yep. then the other is, you'd almost from a consumer affairs standpoint, promises made, you know, for not just for what the taxpayer is paying for, but for what the parent is paying for. And again, you're the expert, I'm not. But what I've read throughout this over years and years has been a real lack of transparency on the part of many, you classify many, most private voucher mm-hmm. schools when it comes to quality and what kind of value they're delivering for the parent dollar as well as the taxpayer dollar.
Here's what I'll say first. Wisconsin is significantly better than a lot of other states as far as transparency and accountability go for their voucher programs. This is as much credit as I feel that I can, in good faith, give this program. It's a function of us having been first. Milwaukee's choice program was the first in the nation to really do it. And so people put a lot of safeguards in up front so that participating in this program, if you are a private school who wants to participate in this program, you have to take on board quite a number of transparency-oriented things so that taxpayer dollars are protected. However, that has never been the goal of voucher proponents in the state. The voucher proponents in the state of Wisconsin, as in Iowa, as in Arizona, as in other states, has always been a universal program with minimal strings and just let the market work to give families whatever it is that they think that they are seeking in the private sphere. The way that that looks like justice to some people is simply a form of market fundamentalism in which whatever revealed preferences reveal is just, and anything that interferes with any individual family's choice is a form of some kind of injustice. The financial aspect of things is where it gets extremely sticky. It's very simple how vouchers effectively defund public education. There's one big pot of money, full stop, for education at the state level. What vouchers do is essentially distribute that money, add institutions to the list of things that can receive that money. So you're diluting the effect of voucher money or of state education money across a much wider variety and a much larger number of institutions. And you're using families as the mechanism of distribution. So every time a student enrolls in a choice school, the district in which that student lives effectively loses state funding, the money that used to follow the student into that district or used to be assigned to that student's district now goes to the choice school. My own district of Wauwatosa, in the most recent years for which there are publicly available figures, it cost my district $1 million. And that is low in comparison to other places. Racine, it costs them $28 million of state aid. Due to the participation in the voucher program. ultimately, this works to underfund schools because it is distributing. It is essentially refusing to take advantage of economies of scale and instead sending large sums of money to across a wide array of institutions such that paradoxically everyone ends up having less.
Heather, the whole notion of when I hear the marketplace, you know, the marketplace of ideas, the marketplace of goods, I understand the marketplace and free enterprise from a commerce point of view, much less so from an education point of view, and wanted to ask your thoughts on that when you hear talk about voucher schools and the marketplace.
It's a way of thinking about education, Pat, that has very little to do with meeting the needs of our kids. Public education is not a form of commerce, but rather a commitment that we make to each other to provide the conditions that we all need for our communities to be strong and our economy to be strong, because we are all well-educated people who know how to be in community with each other. That is the function of the public school. And we know that it takes a significant investment in the public good to make sure that we are meeting the needs of all learners. So these kind of diversions of public funds away from the priority needs of the vast majority of kids are really a huge distraction and a big frustration for those of us who are already frustrated with the ways that the state is selling public schools short.
So when folks are attending next week, then Professor Gottlieb, and they're you're going to be talking to a mostly friendly audience, obviously, of educators. Is there, you know, an action point on this? Is it more for informing future conversations, or is it something that you'd like to see people taking directly to their legislators or their candidates or things like that?
I would like to see people taking this directly to their legislatures. What I am trying to do through this presentation is help people understand the way that goalposts have moved since the 1960s, the 1970s, through vouchers. Vouchers are a way of giving up on ourselves and the fundamental commitments that we make in our state to live in community with one another, to invest publicly in the education of our children, and so on. The foremost lie that is told around vouchers, and the thing that I wish people would understand more clearly, is that low-income families ought to have the same opportunities to opt into private schools as wealthier families. It looks like what we're talking about is a fundamentally equality-based argument. But that distracts us from the point that what low-income families and all families deserve is good public schools that are democratically controlled at the local level and well-resourced, that is, resourced equally to the kinds of traditional public schools that wealthy families have available to them in the communities where they live. If wealthy families want to opt into private schools from that vantage point, fine. But the baseline has to be high quality, well-resourced, traditional public schools that are responsive to community needs and that are dedicated to protecting the individual constitutional rights of their students in every community.
So Heather, to take that to kind of a Main Street point of view, you know, talking to friends and neighbors, how do we distill all of that down? Is it just simply are you making a fairness argument? Are you making a fiscal argument?
It is a fairness argument and a fiscal argument. It's an argument about adequacy. It's an argument about whether or not we're meeting our obligation to our kids and to each other. And it's a conversation about how engaged are we in being partners in making sure that these systems really work effectively? We don't just need to hold our lawmakers accountable for providing the funds. We also need to hold ourselves accountable for making sure that we're electing decision makers who are making good choices at every level of education decision making, including about how to spend our money. We need to make sure that we're holding ourselves accountable for being engaged and involved at the school level where we can, and in electing leaders at the district level who are well representing our kids in their public schools. And our summit opens up conversations about all of these possibilities from the fiscal to the community. We hope that there's a little bit of something for everyone, whether you're interested in school finance or maybe you're concerned about some of the challenges facing your school at the school board level or the curricular level or threats to things like what are the contents of your public library. There will be room for all of these conversations at our event, and we invite folks of all stripes and all opinions to join us. The audience isn't just educators, it's parents and board members and superintendents and everyone who cares about or has a stake in making sure that our public schools are places that really do have the conditions to thrive. That's what we want to demand and deliver by coming together. And we're in such a unique position to do that with big elections on the horizon and new legislative maps and lots of new people running for office who understand this issue a little bit better and are paying much closer attention to the impacts of some of their votes. I think a lot of good change is possible if we can increase our collective impact and awareness on these issues. And I'm grateful for experts like Derek for having these hard and honest conversations with us about what some of these policy measures really mean to our kids.
No, very much so. It's where the experts come in handy and where you can learn more about the Summer Summit and talking to Professor Gottlieb and others over at wisconsinnetwork.org. And there's also a tool there to find out just how much vouchers cost your local school district. You can find that on their website as well. Professor Derek Gottlieb, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great time in Madison at the Summit. Heather, good luck to you as well. We'll talk to you and your friends from the Summit next week.
All right, we'll see everyone on July 30 and 31st in Madison.
Todd Alba's next. You're up. Not played in honor of Todd Alba that we're doing tequila music. It's a National Tequila Day. So
is it really?
It really is, yes. I half expected you to have a bottle behind you there and a lime and some salt, but see none of those things.
I will for noon.
It's now time as Todd puts on face or on YouTube from up in Nashville. It's time for Todd Father takes from the Todd Father, Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show. How are you today?
You know, I'm well. It's a Wednesday. We've gotten to the middle of the week with no major news after 6 months worth of news.
What? No major news? Huh? We're fine.
Today, we're here today. You know, I mean, no major news. You know, last week.
It's 7:51 in the morning. Give it time. I mean, why do you tease? Why do you taunt the news gods like that?
I know. Shame on me.
I mean, we have just been pumping out story after story after story, and today I thought, oh, maybe we'll get a little break, and then Todd says this, and so yeah, who knows what'll happen? Hey, let's talk running mate Veep Stakes, because again, there's been so much of substance, and rightly so. But let's go ahead and just take a couple of minutes just for us to talk about potential running mates for Vice President Kamala Harris, shall we?
Shall we? Yes, please.
Do you have either a favorite or one that you would actually, you know, put a dollar on in Vegas and say, this is going to be the person?
I have a personal favorite, and then I have the latter, what you just said.
Okay.
If Todd ruled the world, and he doesn't, you know, I'm not saying it's the best choice. I'm just saying, like, in my heart, I would love to see Pete Buttigieg, just because I think he's one of the most articulate Democrats out there. He comes from the Midwest. I think he's done a great job in Department of Transportation. He fostered through the biggest bill in Joe Biden's 4 years, the infrastructure bill. So I he comes from a different generation, and yes, we happen to bat for the same team, but that's less of importance. I don't think it's going to be him, because I think that makes it too, in some people's view, too quote unquote liberal of a ticket. And so if I had to put a dollar on somebody, I say Mark Kelly out of Arizona, the former fighter pilot, astronaut, comes from a border state of Arizona. His wife, Gabby Giffords, of course, former congresswoman, an actual victim of political violence. And I just think he's well measured. He is as well spoken. And I think that, as you know, Pat, in politics, particularly at presidential level, vetting is so important. No one of all the people being talked about, even the governors, no one has been vetted more than Mark Kelly.
No doubt there. And so I hear his name a lot, Kelly from Arizona, and Mark Shapiro from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Josh Shapiro. Now you are with any of these, you start to get some of the blowback because everybody has their critics. Mm-hmm. And I have not looked enough into criticisms on Shapiro about voucher schools and Kelly on Middle East issues. I mean, there's going to be something for everybody. One name that I took out of the running was Governor Cooper from North Carolina, simply because, based on talking to my own colleagues through Courier Newsroom, North Carolina has swung so far to the right. There's a supermajority now in the legislature. There's a supermajority on the Supreme Court. So he's the Democratic governor, but he's basically been marginalized. And if you've got a running mate who you don't even think can deliver your own state, you know, that makes it less likely that you'd pick up that person. And I'm trying to think of, you know, who would be a surprise? Who would be a wild card? And to me, Tim Walz fits in there. I mean, yeah, he's a Minnesota governor and he's an aw shucks guy, but I still would be surprised to go with that, because Minnesota is a pretty blue state as it is. Is there anybody else that would count as a real surprise? I mean, Beyonce, well, let's not kid ourselves. That sure. That'd be pretty cool.
Was, the vice Greg, president was
playing, Greg, are you raising your hand because you think it would be a surprise, or you have a suggestion?
I think Greg wants
to be on the ticket.
No. I've heard people put, and I disagree with this, but people put forth Beto O'Rourke. I don't think he has. Oh, no. And then as you know, Todd has for, you know, I think what he'd like to see. I think it's too much, but I think it would be awesome, Stacey Abrams, but I think that's also, you know, not a chance.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think that, and we should quickly add, I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying, why is Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer in the mix? My understanding is she has taken her name out. She has said clearly that she does not want to serve. But I think she would have been a fantastic choice as well. But she's taking herself out of the running.
She is also, and I don't want to put too much on her, but Democrats have enjoyed a resurgence in Michigan. And part of it is because of the top of the ticket, that she has been a very compelling governor. Jennifer Granholm before her was also, she's now a cabinet secretary for President Biden. And I think, without somebody that is that powerful and positive, a helper on the ticket, it might actually, you know, hurt the Democratic Party's efforts in Michigan.
You raised a good point though, Pat, because I've been traveling around the state and I haven't had time to focus. You understand, this has all happened so quickly. I do have, and you can ask my former boss Dale Schultz and others, I do have a bit of a history in picking VP candidates. I called Sarah Palin, unfortunately, for John McCain.
Wait, you what?
Yeah, I said
you
I said,
did.
Yeah, I said it's gonna be Sarah Palin long before anybody. I know. I'm just saying. I could feel it. I could see where it was going. I also happened. I named the Republican ticket in 2012. I said it was going to be Haley Barbour and Paul Ryan. I got it half right. It was Paul Ryan. So I do have a bit of a history. My crystal ball, my bottle of Disaronno is a bit foggy this morning.
Okay, it's National Tequila Day. He doesn't have a bottle of tequila handy, but there's a bottle of Disaronno right within arm's reach, which tells you all you need to know about what a week it's been.
Yes.
I would say, and I don't mean to close on a disparaging note, but I will. Yeah. Again, Hillary Clinton lost by a handful of votes. Yeah. And this, Tim Kaine may be a solid Democrat, but he was absolutely forgettable before he was picked. And, yes. and nobody could tell you right now who Hillary Clinton's running mate was. He added absolutely nothing to the ticket. So you do, as much as you want to talk about central casting and everything else, it you can disparage it, but it does play a role. So Todd will give us more guessing games and perhaps tequila trivia a little later on his show from noon until 2 today. Mr. Alba, thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
You betcha. Greg will be back at 10 a.m. for Matt and Air on Air. Say goodbye, Greg.
Goodbye, Greg.
Tomorrow, we'll have State Representative Melissa Ratcliffe, who's running for a state Senate seat. We'll have Joe Zepecki. We'll have Luke Mathers and Brittany Merlot, if she's still camping at the EAA. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. You can follow us at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning up north.